If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! You ready to go today, Matt Miller?
Yeah, clearly the head is just doing great. Brain is just really braining at full speed.
So let's see, you got a kid on the way, you just had to have a major car repair. How did that go? Dare I ask about the car repair?
The car is fine. Wasn't major car repair. It was a minor car repair. But we did have to get a new washing machine because it did. And we did have a little bit of flooding in the house. And we did think we had to get a new furnace. And potentially two new furnaces.
Oh my God! What on earth?
Yeah, it's been a real thrill of a past week, gotta say.
Oh my God. When is the baby due?
Kiddo is due early May.
Fantastic. So we are on DEFCON 1. Any minute now, you could get the signal call to scramble the fighter jets, to pack the go bag, to get that car going to the hospital.
If he's my kid, he's not showing up early. Like,
you don't think so?
No, well, Matt Miller doesn't show up on time for things.
Okay.
Well, I think this baby's going to be cooking until the due date.
Okay. It sounds like you and your lovely bride with your new home, sounds like you're a lot like a 1986 American comedy directed by Richard Benjamin starring Tom Hanks and Shelley Long, as Walter Fiedling and Anna Crowley, a couple who attempt to renovate a recently purchased house. Ken Matt Miller, A Man About Film, name that movie.
Yeah, that's The Money Pit, right?
The Money Pit! Ring-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding.
For a moment, I almost convinced myself it was the Burbs, but only because I've been seeing the ads on Peacock for the TV reboot of it, of the streaming remake of it. And they really pushed that thing really hard. And I think maybe 12 people watched that, as is the case with most of these streaming things. But yeah, Money Pit.
The film is a loose remake of the 1948 Cary Grant comedy, Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House. Boy, they didn't really put a lot of thought into the titles back in the day, huh?
Wow, they just kind of took the plot premise and just copied and then moved it into the title spot. I guess when it worked for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, they were like, listen, the formula works.
right. So anyway, well, home ownership is a bitch. But as Al Swearengen once said to the newspaper guy in Deadwood, well, you took your beating like a man. Stand up and take it again, because there's a lot more coming. There are more expensive repairs you don't even know about yet, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, some to a human child, I imagine. Oh, like, funny because
you don't have major repairs on the kid. Although the kid is under for a year, just so you know that.
That's what I like to hear. And actually, thankfully, we didn't have to get a new furnace.
Yeah, the orphanages take them for up to a full year after birth. Just letting you know.
Good. That's great. They give you a little trial run for a while before.
That's horrible of me to say.
It's making a sound. It's making a weird sound. Is that normal? I don't know. I'm going to send it back.
Wait. How did orphanages work back in the day?
I came prepared for a lot of topics.
You're ready to talk about Michigan winning the championship and the Final Four and a bunch of other stuff. Now I delve into this.
If I know if movies are true, there's a big door. They're run by nuns, and you put unwanted children in baskets with maybe a blanket, and you put them in the front, maybe a fire station as well. And I believe that's how orphanages work. And then they serve you gruel. I don't know. Okay.
Here we go. The internet's open. They've got the explanation. How orphanages worked. Contrary to popular belief, most children in the 19th and 20th century in orphanages were not actually orphans, meaning no living parents, but rather had at least one parent, often placing them there due to poverty or illness. Children often followed a strict, regimented daily routine that included chores, education, and, of course, religious instruction. Many were funded through charity, donations, and government support.
So they were more like daycares? Like, what is happening here?
Permanent daycares. Like, you're giving them up. So here would be my question, as since we're down Macabre Boulevard, turning towards My God Way, what would it take in today's day and age for a couple to say, here, have him or have her? Would they check your financial situation? Would they make you go through counseling to go, are you sure about this? What kind of paperwork is there? Has it ever been done? Do people do it today? I don't know.
I assume it must happen today. We just don't talk about it very much as a society because, you know, people don't like to think about that kind of stuff. But I assume it still happens today. There are still, you know, kids who need adopting in this country and things like that. And there are still people who are like, you know, I'm not ready for you to raise a human child. Boy, man, real. I came into this today and I was like, listen, I need a pick me up. We may be ending a civilization tonight. So I'm going to talk to my buddy Zabe and we're going to have a lighthearted sports and movies conversation. And I drove straight into a wall of orphan talk.
Okay, we're getting to some fun stuff, but just hold on a second. While we're here, I just want to finish the category like I'm on Jeopardy. Okay, let's finish the category.
Yeah, okay.
Imagine if in today's day and age you could say, here you go. By the way, it's better than pulling a Casey Anthony. Just saying. All right. Orphanage is still greater sign Casey Anthony or the poor mom in North Carolina, Smith, I believe, who drove her kids into the lake.
There's always a better option than murder. That's so just a good way to live your life.
It sure is. So let's say you give your kid up to a orphanage in 2026. Do you then talk about it at subsequent social outings? Hey, I thought you just had a kid. It was a few months ago. Wasn't working out, though. Wouldn't sleep. So we gave it up to the orphanage. Like,
yeah, I'm imagining. That? Yeah, I'm imagining a party, swirling a martini, just being like, no, it just wasn't a good fit. You know,
we really couldn't travel as much as we wanted to, and our water heater broke, so we already had a lot of expenses. So okay,
and listen, they don't warn you for how much raising children is I'm not going to call it a racket, but man, everything is super expensive when it comes to kids. They really don't tell you. People say kids are expensive. That's underselling it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you have no idea, but you're about to find out. It's wonderful. I'm out,
and I can't wait. I'm very excited.
No, it's going to be great. You're going to be a great dad, and it'll be wonderful. So there we go. We're done. We're off of Macabre Avenue, and we are turning on to Michigan 69, UConn 63 way. Your final score on a bruising and aesthetically ugly championship game that saw Michigan shoot 38%, and it saw UConn shoot 31%. They were a combined 24% from three. I think they were 11 for 45 or something like that. UConn only had Michigan only had two threes, and they were well below their normal average points. They still won the game thanks to the fact they shot a bunch of free throws, like 28 total, because UConn and Dan Hurley said, we got to muck it up. We can't deal with their size. We got to muck it up. And they mucked it up, and it was an ugly fucking game. I did not particularly enjoy it. But I have a good friend, Matt Miller, who I won't name, Ron Thomas, who texted the group a glowing endorsement of the game. Let me see if I can find it for you here. But he is a big basketball fan. And he knows more about not only this season, the teams, but the referees. He knows more than me on a multiple of fronts. And I didn't want to confront him on it going, that game sucked. What are you talking about? That was referees let way too much go. It was like, it was like a football game, and it was low scoring, and they took up shitty shots and they missed half of them. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, that was a bad game.
A depressing end to a pretty depressing March Madness, gotta say. Like, and it was already a matchup that I was like, UConn versus Michigan, can I root for a meteor strike? Like, can I root for the roof to cave in? So I was already going into the game being like, all right, at least be entertaining, you know, at least be. And then you watch, and yeah, it's just it is not the beautiful game. It is muck, and it is fouls, and it is
reviews. You know, I get
a lot of reviews, and you know, if you're one of those people who's like, the three pointers ruined the game, well, do I have the national championship for you? That if you like two pointers and free throws.
That right.
Thumbs up.
That was good.
So,
all right, here's my boy Ronnie's tweet. He got text to the group. This has been a hell of a basketball game. Players decided it as it should be. Bring your lunchbox and work boots. Great stuff. Perfectly officiated too. Congrats, Kevin. He's the Michigan fan. Good night, boys.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay. Not the guy doing the tweet. Because, like, if you're a Michigan fan, of course you thought last night's game was, you know, gorgeous.
No, he was congratulating the one Michigan fan on the group chat. Now, here is a funny sidebar to that whole thing about, you know, texting friends and whatnot. So, Kevin, Desert Fox, he's a Marine, and he's from Detroit area, so he's all Michigan all the time, right? We give them shit when they lose, and when their coach, like Sharon Moore, commits horrible crimes and gets fired for it and kind of got off without too much punishment. You know,
yeah, that happened like within the past year, right? What happened to him?
Yeah, he pled down to a much lesser thing. He's going to have to undergo, like, you know, surveillance and house arrest. It's a very light sentence, all things considered. What he could have gotten was a lot worse. But anyway, so, you know, Kevin is on various text threads, and I decided to text Kevin, the Marine, with my buddy Bob Miller, not spelled your name, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, but But I decided to text Kevin and Bob Miller a little tweet about SERE training, S-E-R-E, which is what the downed pilot used to evade capture, because I thought my two military buddies would appreciate it. And instead of sending it to Kevin and Bob Miller, I sent it to Kevin and Matt Miller. Matt Miller, not your Matt Miller, but Matt Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, is my broadcast agent out of Chicago. And so now I've hooked up two people who don't even know each other over a tweet, and they start going back and forth. And, you know, it's very civil and complimentary. And I have to jump in and go, oh, hey, Kevin, sorry, meet my agent, Matt. You don't know him. This was a mistake. I meant to send it to you and Bob Miller. But they were very complimentary. And then I started bragging on the fact that Matt Miller's son, my agent, just finished serving in the IDF. Even though he's an American-born Jewish kid, he went to Israel and signed up for actual hazard combat duty in the IDF. Badass.
There's a lot happening in this story.
A lot happening. And then I had to text Bob Miller. Bob Miller's son is a Navy SEAL, believe it or not. So all the Millers I know are kind of like military badasses.
And then there's me.
Well, that's all right. We appreciate the military, even if we're not Navy SEALs ourselves. So that was sort of a funny thing, is I couldn't even read my phone as I'm just sending texts left and right last night. So the game was not pleasant to watch, in my opinion. It was way too let them play. Nobody likes guys getting in foul trouble. Nobody likes anyone fouling out. But, I mean, if you're going to be that rough, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be a wrestling scrum. And that, to me, is not attractive. The domes, statistically speaking, they say don't affect shooting. I'm not sure I believe it. I think it's got to be the case. What the NCAA does do, which is a joke, is they use brand new basketballs that are overinflated because they put them right to the top edge of the PSI recommendation. You can see it in the dribbles. You can see it in guys losing control of the ball when they shouldn't lose control of the ball. And the rims they use are very tight. You could also see that in the rims they used for the game, because they bring in brand new stanchions and they just roll them out. Why do they do this? Like the Nate Bargatze sketch in SNL, nobody knows. That was a funny meme going around. We shall play the championship basketball game of the year in a football stadium with brand new balls that bounce too much and rims that are too tight. But why, sir? Nobody knows.
It doesn't even make good television or good broadcast either, these giant arenas, because CBS does their best to audio the thing up and make it sound full and lively, but it sounds dead in these. It's always kind of felt they're too mammoth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these places are not designed for such a confined space to be people's focuses of attention. Obviously, it's not like a football field is like, but it's significantly larger. So yeah. You end up with this broadcast that feels very removed.
Yes.
And it doesn't feel as, you know, electric as it should in that moment. A basketball game should have a little bit more, you know, fire going on. And obviously it's the national championship. There's already inherently some stuff going on, but yeah, it the broadcast just ends up feeling a little dead energied. And part of that too is like, why are we playing this on a Monday night? Like, why are we playing this at a Monday night, 9 Eastern? Like, we are, I know, in television and to appease the West Coast part of it too, but
when would
be
ideal, do you think?
First, it's Sunday night. What are we doing now? Big important events happen on Sunday nights.
6 Eastern?
Oh, no. It's seven Eastern.
7 Eastern. Okay. Listen, that would be great as well. But then you would have to play the semis on Friday. You okay with that?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. That's fine by me. And I'm sure the teams don't like it, but.
Or you could play the semis on Thursday. Thursday are a better TV night, correct?
I mean, back in the day, that was the must-see. Isn't it? Must-see TV.
Right, but isn't Thursday still better than Friday?
Sports is always a different beast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, sports on any night will draw better. Like, it's just a little bit harder. But, I mean, yeah, you could do Thursday nights.
In theory. Friday, people go out. basically.
Friday, so, in theory. The theory is Friday has always been a bad TV night, so that's where they dump their, like, bad, you know. But you're the Final Four. You could get traffic on Friday nights and then play on Sunday night. Or, like you said, Thursday to Sunday would be fine, too. You get an extra day off. But having the championship game, and football's this way, too, where, you know, having it on a Monday night that late is just a really good way to feel like a damp squib of an ending. And, and I think also the value of upsets really showed their value in this tournament, because without Cinderellas, without those underdog stories to maintain interest between the first round and this Final Four weekend, it was like, I felt like this weekend it was like, oh, we're still doing the national, we're still doing the men's college national championship. That's still happening right now. That's
right. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, it's still happening. It's going to happen.
Like, there was just no connective tissue between the chaos of March Madness that first weekend and, you know, the great teams, the final. I don't need George Mason making it to the Final Four, Florida Atlantic, but you need some of those storylines, some of those interesting things to maintain interest across the 32, the 16, because otherwise else it's just, I don't know, it's been fine basketball, but is anyone, there were a lot of people who were like, oh man, without any upsets, you're just going to get prime basketball every single round. And I don't think we got any better basketball over these last few weeks without those nasty mid-majors and those nasty small schools getting in the way.
Yeah, it'd be better basketball if they just used existing broken-in regulation balls that have a little bit of wear on them. Mm-hmm. And then what the NBA does, and I saw this up close for the one season I had the greatest gig ever, which was to be the clock operator at Bullets games in the NBA. Fuck. So I sat on the scorer's table and I had one job. Click, click, on, off. I was not trained for the 24-second clock. That was a much more high-stress job because you had to watch to see whether or not shots hit the rim and then reset the 24. Literally, I was just the clock guy. But it was great. I got to see NBA games right in front of my fucking face. Now, it was a terrible team, the Bullets, but it was great. For a year out of college, I did probably almost all of the games at home. It's a cool deal. And I got paid like $50 a game, plus a meal.
Bullets. A team so bad, they make the Wizards look good.
Right. So anyway, what happened in the NBA, and I think it still does today, they would roll out a rack of balls that they're warming up with. And Darryl Walker, who was a guard from Kentucky, I want to say, was on the Bullets back in the day. And he was like the team captain, and he was the guy in charge of picking the ball. And he would go through the rack, and he'd bounce the balls, he'd pick up another one, and the ones that had been approved for play had little X's on them, so they'd already been vetted. Like, all the refs were like, okay, these are within the realm of okay. And, you know, Walker would pick the ball, and then the other team would have the right to then go, okay, what do we think? Da, da, da. And usually one guy from the other team, he would almost always agree, like, yeah, this one's fine. But, you know, this, you know, our guy was the guy that chose the ball. And they were all well-worn-in balls. They were not ragged, but they weren't brand new. They weren't bright orange, like the ones the NCAA pulls out of the box with the stickers on them. Says, here, play with these. And then they flate them so that the ball, you're dribbling it, it's up to your eyeballs, and you can't go, hey, can we get one that's not so lively? Like, nope, that's the regulation PSA. So if they did that, it would lead to better basketball. If they could find a way to have referees call the game, you don't want to be overly officious, but fouls are fouls. Like, there was a whack on the arm by somebody under the basket that caused a turnover on UConn. Like, you should never miss that call. It's right in front of your face. How does that happen?
The only thing I'll say for the officiating is that at least it was, it did feel like they were like, this is the tone of the game. We have set this tone, and they didn't horribly deviate it from it too much. Like, It was one of those classic, like, listen, if you're going to let them play, at least generally across the board, let them play. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a game where, like, it felt like at some point they realized they hadn't called enough calls and were all of a sudden being like, oh, no, we're ticky-tack now, baby. We're all in on. So at least there's that element to it. And you know, UConn, you know, it's a smart strategy to be like, I mean, strategic wise, it makes sense to be like, we're going to Draymond this up. We're going to, you know, dare you to foul us all out of this game and, you know, see if we can do what we can do. And they couldn't, which was great. I would much rather see Dan Hurley lose than Dan Hurley win.
Now, in defense of Dan Hurley, not that he needs me to defend him, but in defense of Dan Hurley, he was pretty solid after the game and on the podium and in interviews, from what I heard.
Gino Auriemma it up.
Right, exactly. He gave ample praise to Dusty May and Michigan. He did take one little shot saying, well, you know, two of our guards got two fouls for the first half. I thought that took a lot of momentum out of us. And it's like, okay, he's trying to register these things for future calls. Like, coaches are always lobbying, right?
He's getting ready for October.
Yeah. Hey, look, it all goes into the bank. All goes into the bank. Every little headbutt that's not a headbutt goes into the bank of getting a call somewhere down the line. So he was pretty good in that regard. And also, the UConn players waited for the celebration of Michigan to finally wrap up, and they waited to do a proper handshake line. And that, I'm all for that, Matt Miller.
You do love a handshake line. You do love
sportsmanship. I mean, come on, which is also why I don't like, and I wish they'd retire this, the belt to ass celebration. A couple of, you know, Michigan players did this to like one of the little sideboards, you know, where they grab an actual belt. They're like, yeah, I think they might have even been doing it to the UConn logo. I'm like, this is not worthy of any aspiration. You don't want 10-year-old kids doing it. It's abuse is what it is. It's mimicking child abuse, whipping the kid with a belt. And you didn't kill UConn. You didn't really belt to ass. They made it very nervous at the end. You were lucky to escape.
No, that was a game at the end of the game. Yeah, I always find it so strange that in this time of sports monitoring where it's like, oh, if you pretend you have a gun in a touchdown celebration, you are you sacrificially give up your touchdown and like all this very intense monitoring. But apparently the reenact, you know, beating a child with a belt apparently has gotten through unscathed in this era.
Yeah, that is. And if it's not a child, it's, God forbid, a woman, which is even worse. No one assumes that a man is getting his ass whooped with a belt by another man. There'd be a fight.
Yeah, and I mean, how many, just, you know, how many chronicled things are there where it's like, I'm getting in a fight with a guy and I got to take off my belt first. And it's just like, that's interesting fight approach. Okay. Like, it is such a strange thing. I don't like that celebration.
I don't get it.
Either.
But Hurley, to his credit, was pretty good afterwards.
Well,
by the way,
Hurley's smart. Hurley knows that these are the post games that people remember. And this is going to be the last post game of the entire season. This is the big game. And this is the one that sticks in people's heads. So if you don't handle it like a professional, like Gino Auriemma or, you know, Cam Newton at the Super Bowl all those years ago, that's what's going to stick in reporters and people's craws for the next several months. So you can act like a jackass and all of the other post game things. But and the final one of the final year, you're on your best behavior now.
Yeah. By the way, Darryl Walker, former NBA guard, played for the Bullets from 87 to 91, also played for the Knicks and the Bulls and the Nuggets, Pistons, from Arkansas. Oh. Darryl Walker was the ball guy, picking out the ball every night for the Bullets back in 91.
Quick detour. I do want to ask you, I've never asked you this, and as a logo sports nerd, Bullets versus Wizards. Are you okay with Wizards? Is this like contentious in Washington, or do people just not care? They're like, I don't know. We have a basketball team?
Well, that's a great question. Number one, am I okay with it? No, it does not burn like losing the Redskins name and logo, because the Bullets, other than the 79 championship, hadn't won shit. They were in the finals in 78, lost. They won in 79. That's pretty much it. So my entire life, for the most part, since I was just a little kid, they've sucked. So, yeah, Abe Poland, then the owner, decided that because of rising gun violence and homicides in D.C., could no longer abide by having Bullets as the team name. And they supposedly put out a contest. This was in the early 90s, I want to say. A contest amongst fans, suggestions, and then fans would vote. We're talking pre-internet, right? Early 90s. And they allegedly, because nobody was actually monitoring the vote like they were election watchers, the fans allegedly chose Wizards, which is horrible because it's a child's name. You're infantilizing the team. Wizard. He's a wizard. I mean, that doesn't inspire anybody. I'm sorry. So the Wizards have always sucked as a name. It could have been worse, though, because this is one you will not believe when I tell you.
Oh, no.
Do you know what was supposedly one of the possible five names for the Bullets when they changed their name?
The Rifles.
The Sea Dogs.
Oh. So like the minor league baseball team.
Yeah,
might have dodged a bullet there.
Pun intended.
Oh my gosh.
Gotcha. Yes. It was Dragons, Wizards, Stallions, Express, and Sea Dogs. This was 1997, actually. So there is a minor league team named the Sea Dogs?
In Major League Baseball, yeah, the Portland Sea Dogs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's funny you bring up fan votes. This is one of my favorite factoids. So for people who don't know, my father and I take a baseball trip to a different part of the country every year, minor league, Major League Baseball.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
Where are you going this summer, by the way, now that we're in the spring?
Maybe Beloit. With the kiddo coming this way, it is okay. Going to be a little tough. So, right. But one year we went to New Orleans and Biloxi, because Biloxi has one of the Brewers minor league teams, the Biloxi Shuckers.
Yeah.
And then New Orleans, which for the longest time was a AAA team called the New Orleans Zephyrs, pretty beloved down there. And they decided they had to get a new name. That they had to do a sexy rebrand, because that's what all the other teams were doing. And they rebranded the team, based on a fan vote, the New Orleans Baby Cakes.
Oh, I remember this.
Based off the King Cake Baby. But when we were in New Orleans, everyone we talked to down there was like, no one voted for that name. No one in New Orleans placed a vote for the New Orleans Baby Cakes. This was totally a rigged operation. They had these logos and everything ready to go. And I think that team is no longer a Major League Baseball affiliated minor league team. They got culled out of the system, probably because they weren't making enough money, despite playing in a larger city than a lot of these minor league clubs. But yeah, and I blame their non-existence on the fact that they named themselves the Baby Cakes, and everyone in New Orleans was like, that's not our team. Sorry, you messed that up.
Yeah. Now, the funny reverse of that is that the Simpsons once made an episode out of the football team moving to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and being
the football team or the baseball team?
Well, because I believe the rich Texas owner said, they're like, but sir, they don't play baseball. And he says, they'll play what I tell them to play. That was the funny line from that episode. So I don't know if it was a football team or not, but whatever. He's like, moving the team to Albuquerque, they're going to be named the Isotopes.
Which there is a real now AAA baseball team.
It is, and I think it does well with merchandise and is popular.
They even designed the uniforms like the Simpsons, yeah.
Right. So, you know, names do matter on that. Okay, let me navigate back and let me be positive about the Final Four, because I know some people get sensitive. Why'd you even watch that if you're just going to be a negative Nelly about it? And I'm like,
it's the internet. Of course we're going to be negative.
I mean, I'm calling balls and strikes. I mean, how was the game? Sucked. But I still watched it. I watched all of it. The post-championship celebration has Werner as the official ladder of cutting down the nets. What a great, you know, sponsorship tie-in. Okay. I don't even know who's the number two ladder company out there. Ooh. There's Werner. I know Werner, but who else is making ladders?
Does Black and Decker make a ladder?
They might. Who knows? But it got me to thinking, Miller, where is Fiskars with the official scissors endorsement of the net ceremony? Because that was the first name that came to my mind when I thought of Big Scissor. And I looked it up. Fiskars Corporation is a Finnish-based consumer goods company founded in 1649. And they have several divisions, but they are most known for the orange-handled, ergonomically comfortable pair of long, sharp scissors. If somebody at the NCAA has not put in a call to Fiskars to say, hey, you ought to sponsor this. We got Werner on board with these ladders. Get on board with your scissors.
First of all, I am tickled by the idea of multiple divisions in Fiskars. Like, it's like, oh, that's Ronnie from the shears department. We don't talk to the shears people. Those prudes. Second of all, I bet they have pitched Fiskars on this. And I wonder if Fiskars turned them down, because when they cut down the nets, the scissors always looks like it's having a little bit of trouble, right? Like, it's not like the easiest. It doesn't always look like it's like it, the ladder never screws up after the post game. Because, like, if the ladder collapses or something like that, someone's probably gotten hurt and it's a true disaster. The ladder's always sturdy and it's really got to screw up to, you know, have a collapse. But if you're the official scissor sponsor and your product is being used. To struggle to get through this very, like, sinewy basketball net, is that what you want? Like, is that the image you want of people being like, I really got to saw my way through this net?
That is a good point, although I would argue that I believe the nets they use are these laminated, treated, semi-stiff nets that are not as easy to cut through. These are not just like your go-to Dick's Sporting Goods, get a net. That like is very loose and whatever. They actually are kind of like coated in a way so they don't move as much when the ball goes through them.
Yeah, and they don't flip up and over or something like that. Right. But I bet that's a part of the negotiation problem, is that Fiskars was like, listen, you're going to have to put in easy cut nets at the end of the game so that way our product looks like the best scissors you've ever seen in your life. And they were like, we're not going to put in new nets when the game ends. And Fiskars is like, well, we're out. You're going to have to go to, I don't know, Sharpie or something like that.
I can just see the call made to Fiskars over there in Espoo, Finland. ESPOO, Finland.
We're not making our own scissors these days.
Espoo. Where are you located? I'm in Espoo. Imagine call to Fiskars, and they're like, why do we need to endorse? We are the number one selling scissor in world. World
name
class.
Name number two scissors company. You name can't.
Right. You already make the most supreme scissors ever. Orange, we know. Orange handle. That's ours. We own copyrights. 15 different trademarks. Copyrights. Orange. Probably like, no. By the way, Fiskars has two strategic business units, living and functional, and their primary reporting segments are living, functional, and other. Their other segments contain the group's investment in portfolio and real estate, corporate headquarters, and shared services.
What is the difference between living and functional? Those are casual scissors. We're in the business scissors category. What's going on here?
Fisker's products are available in more than 100 countries. As of December of 23, the company employs 7,000 plus people in 29 countries. So there you go.
Now you know. Do they make the large scissors for like business openings and stuff like that too?
Like where they're cutting a huge ribbon at a groundbreaking?
Right. Is that like the cookie division at Fisker's?
I don't know. How many pair of scissors do you have in your house?
Too many. Too many.
That's the wrong answer. The one cannot have too many because you never want to look for a pair. It's the most annoying thing.
It is. Because you're never, also, while we're, I'm not going to bring that. I was going to talk about cutting umbilical cords, and no one wants cutting umbilical cords.
Right. What kind of scissors do you think the nurse will use? Probably medical scissors.
What if it'd be really funny if they handed me like the orange handle Fiskars, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I just talked to my buddy Zabe about this the other day.
These things are the best. Feel how good they are, how smooth and nicely they're geared. Oh, yeah.
The nurse hands me the scissors, and it's like, this is the official scissors of, Ascension Milwaukee. And it's like, oh, thank you. Wow. But I bet you they wouldn't do that because umbilical cords are harder to cut than people say they are, that they're a little bit tougher.
You know that, or are you guessing?
We were doing the birthing classes, and one of the things the teacher said was, listen, don't feel bad or don't feel stressed if, like, you cut down and it doesn't just, like, nicely, neatly like paper. It is, you know, it is sinewy. That is human. That is human body. So, like, you really kind of...
What if you say, I got strong hands. Let me just rip it. Here.
Oh, let me use God's scissors, my teeth.
God's scissors, my teeth. That'd be fantastic. Your wife is looking on in horror as she's just delivered your beautiful baby, your firstborn. Question, do you know what seats you have for the birth? Outfield, loge, mezzanine, behind the plate? Where are you going to be?
Well, it depends because they do all the different birthing positions these days.
First
like,
pace,
it's not just stirrups line, in the
field. Me personally, I wanted to be in the center field bleachers, but then I kind of had to migrate down to the first base line to help, you know, my wife get through it. And then one of the doctors, being a chucklehead, said, "What, you want to come around here to behind home plate?" And I'm like, "Nope, don't need those seats right there."
I imagine I will be down the first baseline doing the massages and the breathe, you got this is
breathe,
and
ice chips. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then using my God scissors to cut the umbilical cord. Okay.
Now to what I love the most about the Final Four is one shining moment. This is a contentious thing with some people. Our friend Drew Olson of now Fox Sports 920 up there, he hates it. Somebody hurt him as a child. He thinks it's too saccharine, too sweet, too cheesy. Not in his wheelhouse. Me,
he's not a sentimental guy. He's a journalist. He yeah,
I love it. It was a song written by songwriter and performer David Barrett, who was a Detroit guy, loved sports. He's still alive. Wrote the song, pitched it to CBS, pitched it to, I believe, it was going to be the Super Bowl highlight recap video for CBS the year they had the Super Bowl back in the 80s. And it was originally going to say the ball is kicked, not tipped. Because every other part of the lyrics are easily convertible to football. But CBS passed. And then because CBS had college basketball, they're like, yeah, you know what? You change kick to tip, we could use this. And so it became the anthem of wrapping up the tournament, and I've loved it ever since. They've used multiple performers, including Jennifer Hudson, former American Idol winner, as well as Luther Vandross. I think the Vandross version was the one they used last night.
That's the only one that matters, really. Yeah. Like the Luther's the one.
The Luther's the one. I mean... You know, Barrett is a decent vocalist, but he's just a songwriter. He's a guy behind a piano. Vandross is a world-class artist, so okay, fine. But it was great this year. It was so good because they had so many great assets. They had four bona fide, holy shit, buzzer beaters not to mention a near buzzer beater and the guy from Vandy whose ball rattled out.
That's right, yeah.
And they got all that in. They had little cameo slices of play-by-play highlights. They had little bits of post-game joy, like when Dylan Darling for St. John's made that impossible layup. They had him with Tracy Wolfson, and she's like, what did Coach tell you in the huddle? And he's like, I don't know, just yelling at me like usual. They got that in there. They got Fulgaris for Iowa with the super sky point to his deceased father, which was great. It had great assets. They put it all together. It was a tight-moving, well-stitched-together, A-plus, beautiful. Your thoughts?
Yeah, for a tournament that, you know, I've denigrated, lacking upsets, lacking, you know, a lot of excitement in that middle area and stuff like that, you did get some really good games. I mean, you did get, you know, the high point craziness. You had the Santa Clara, Kentucky finish. You know, yeah, you had the Duke collapse.
And in there as well, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you had Siena making a game of it. You know, there was a lot to take from this tournament. This wasn't a bad tournament. This wasn't, you know, one that we won't, you know, it's just not maybe the most memorable, but in the moment, this was all really good stuff, and they got good stuff. They got good material, and they've got the crew for it now. They have, they have so much coverage of all of these games now and all of the footage after the games. And then you can take the stuff from social media teams too. There's just the social media age has just really given CBS just an insane amount of material to play with for this awesome stuff that even a tournament that, you know, didn't have, you know, maybe the most memorable characters or the best Cinderella of all time or any Cinderella of all time, you can craft a pretty special feeling montage out of that.
Yeah. They had the Braylon Mullins three that beat Duke. They had a quick cut to Eagle, Raftery, and Hill as they reacted just like, oh, you know, and they're all back in their chairs, and it just captured the essence of it so good. So the winning team, Michigan, had five guys from five different places purchased off of Amazon.com, known as the Portal. One shining moment plays. Portal opens literally a minute after it's done playing at midnight Eastern on Monday night. And this is the way things are. You and I can hate it, Matt Miller, but this is how the sun rises and now the sun sets until further notice. Are you going to come to terms with how college basketball is?
I am. I've come to terms with all of the college football thing, like the fact that all these guys are rentals, the fact that, you know, High Point is a charming story until 24 hours after they lose and their coach immediately goes off somewhere else, or all these small schools that are such nice stories and then everyone bails. I've come to terms with that. I will. I just, if we're talking about stories from this, I found a write-up about Dusty May, the head coach of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it describes the turnaround that Michigan had this year as, you know, near worst to first. They went from 8-24 to 37-3 this year, you know. And this revival should give Cignetti vibes. And you do not get to say Cignetti took a team, Indiana football, was deeply irrelevant. That was barely, if you asked an Indiana student 10 years ago if they had a football team, they would be like, if it was soccer, are you trying to say, are you European? And turn them into not only a national championship, but a decisive, commanding national champion. Michigan was just in a national championship not that long ago. This was not that bad of a team. And I know they had a massive collapse because of everything going on with that happened there. But Michigan is still Michigan. This is still a storied college with, you know, a resume of alumni that runs deep. This was not a difficult turnaround job, especially with Michigan money to play with. So the idea that, oh, wow, Kurt Cignetti, wow, this is Cignettian what has happened here. Let's pump the brakes. Not every impressive head coaching job needs to immediately become the thing of myth and lore. Cignetti did it incredible. Now, if Dusty May had pulled this off at, say, I don't know, Utah State or Rutgers, then we're talking about a turnaround. If you took Rutgers from that.
Right. That is a fair point. You said last year they were terrible. 2 years ago, Juwan Howard's last year was the 23-24 season. They were 8-24.
Yes.
3-17 in conference. How'd they win three? It's a miracle. So they grabbed the guy that took Florida Atlantic to the Final Four, a commuter school, in Dusty May, and he did that the year that NIL was just in its infancy, where you could get guys out of the portal. You couldn't pay them nearly as much, but he could do that, and he was very nimble in getting a few guys, and he took them to the Final Four. And then the floodgates opened, and now, you know, they go and they order players, and they put them together, and it's how it's going to be until they change the way the system is, and I'm not sure how or when that's ever going to change. But May's a really good coach, and he was a video assistant as recently as 20 years ago. And I know that sounds stupid, but get to be 58, and they'll say, just 20 years ago, and it's like nothing, because I remember 2006. Like, yeah, I remember that. I feel like that was yesterday. So
they're doing anniversaries of movies that I was not only alive for but conscious of.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's
25
a
years since Shrek. Can you believe that?
Yeah, talk to me about that. And they're doing, I believe, a re-release in movies of the original. I saw a trailer for it at the last movie I went to with Catherine, which was, of course, the second Super Mario Brothers movie. And I'm like, oh, so they're releasing the original Shrek in theaters again?
Oh, it's going to make so much money, Zabe. I bet you the Shrek re-release makes it makes a pretty solid chunk of change, because that is a real millennial staple, too.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, okay. that re-release could make, like, that could be one of the higher grossing summer weekends when that hits theaters again, because my generation loves that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you being a millennial, did Shrek hit you in the feels?
Oh, yeah. The original Shrek felt like such a, like, coming out of 90s Disney, where it was all these very, you know, ornate your Beauty and the Beasts and your Lion King and Pocahontas, these very kind of esteemed productions. And to find one that, you know, was making fun of fairy tale, you know, lore, and that it was the 3D, it was the Toy Story, and they were still figuring that out. But Shrek looked so good at the time. It certainly doesn't look as good as it did back then. Right. But still, you know, at the time, it felt so fresh and new and exciting.
And it was funny as hell with Chris
and
Rock.
And super funny. And, you know, the Shrek 2 was really funny as well. I can't speak to the 50 other sequels that they made off of its
But Shrek the Halls is not one of your favorites, the Christmas one?
Shrek Forever After? Shrek the Third? But Shrek Scared 22? Stupid? That might be an earnest movie.
Shrek Scared. Okay.
That's going to make a ton of money, because my generation, it is both an ironic love, but also a sincere love for Shrek as grownups. And the younger kids like it too. So, yeah, that's going to do very well when that gets re-released, and everything gets re-released now. But Jerry Maguire is getting a re-release, because I think this is its 30th anniversary of Jerry Maguire. Yeah, this weekend. You can watch Jerry Maguire in theaters this weekend.
Yeah, no thanks. I love Jerry Maguire, and I used to get all kinds of shit from Bob and Brian because they said it's a chick movie, and they explained why they defined it as a chick movie, and I tried to push back by going, yeah, but the sports themes and the sports arcs of the movie ring true, and it's well done, about a wide receiver struggling to both get paid and find his place and whatever, and the support of his wife, and Jerry Maguire also navigating this complicated minefield of, I want to be a sports agent because I love sports, but I don't want to be a scumbag like Bob Sugar. I love the movie, but they're like, you had me at hello, chick movie. And I'm like, all right, well, I can't argue with you guys.
What rule says a man can't enjoy a romance either? Come on.
There you listen. This is what it was deemed, and I was saddled with it. So, all right, A Man About Film is how you find Mr. Miller on Twitter, at A Man About Film. He also has a Substack writing about movies, which is great, at A Man About Film. Look for it there and make sure to support in any way possible and spread the word. Mr. Miller, you are excused today, and I appreciate your visitation as always. Everyone who listened to today's podcast, thank you very much. Rate and review. Tickle the algorithmic gods. Tell a friend, and we will see you next time.
Send me your washing machine recommendations.
As the music dies, something in your eyes calls to mind a silver screen, and all it said goodbye. I'm never gonna dance again.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.